Ukraine celebrates its 31st Independence Day while fighting for the same on this day, marking 6 months of continued Russian aggression.
Today is not a day to wish you a happy independence celebration, because you are suffering, you are fighting, and you are fighting to defend your homeland, to defend the future of your country and the future of your children.
European leaders send messages of support as Ukrainian President Zelensky tells his country that the war will end with victory. Today is Wednesday, August 24th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed his country on Wednesday. In a speech to mark 31 years of independence, Zelensky said that Ukraine was reborn when Russia invaded on February 24th and would recapture annexed Crimea and occupied areas in the east, adding that the enemy thought Ukrainians would greet them with flowers and champagne, but received wreaths and Molotov cocktails. The Ukrainian president said that he used to think peace would mark the end of the war, but now that victory will do so. He said that Ukraine will not look for mutual understanding, even though they understand the Russian language Moscow came to defend, while killing thousands of people and came to liberate. Speaking to Sky News, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that members of the alliance must invest more in defense in an increasingly dangerous world. Stoltenberg said that while NATO is not part of the current conflict with Russia, the alliance supports Ukraine.
When we see the aggressive actions of President Putin against a sovereign, peaceful nation in Europe, Ukraine, and all the threatening rhetoric against NATO allies, then we need to invest more, and that's exactly what NATO allies are doing.
He also reiterated a call for a peaceful resolution to the conflict.
This war will most likely end at the negotiating table. President Zelensky has stated that clearly. But we know that what Ukraine can achieve on the negotiating table is totally dependent on the strength on the battlefield. And therefore, the best way we can ensure that the negotiations lead to a result which is acceptable for Ukraine is to provide military, economic, financial, humanitarian support to Ukraine now.
Pledging that Ukrainians can count on NATO support for as long as it takes. European leaders also sent messages of support. These included those from President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, and the President of the European Council, Charles Michel.
Dear Ukrainian friends, today is not a day to wish you a happy independence celebration, because you are suffering, you are fighting, and you are fighting to defend your homeland, to defend the future of your country and the future of your children. But you are also fighting to defend our common European values and principles. And that's why your family members are our family members. That's why your future is our common future. And that's why we want to support you as much as we can to protect and to defend your independence, your sovereignty, and your territorial integrity. We are with you.
As the world marks 6 months of Russia's latest invasion of Ukraine, Polygraph.info explains why Moscow's actions are not in line with the United Nations Charter.
On August 16th, Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed that his war on Ukraine does not violate the United Nations Charter. Quote, "We have taken the decision to conduct a special military operation in Ukraine, a decision which is in full conformity with the Charter of the UN. The aims of this operation are to ensure the security of Russia and its citizens and protect the residents of Donbass from genocide." That statement is false. Article 2, Part 4 of the UN Charter prohibits the use of force against the territorial integrity of another state. Russia has used military force against Ukraine and violated its territorial integrity. Russia has previously stated, falsely, that its military aggression against Ukraine is in line with Article 51 of the UN Charter. But Article 51 allows a nation to defend itself, and Ukraine did not attack or threaten to carry out an armed attack on Russia. According to the UN, between February 24th and July 24th, 2022, there were 12,272 civilian casualties in Ukraine, 5,237 killed, and 7,035 injured. The national parliaments of eight countries have recognized Russia's invasion of Ukraine as an act of genocide.
Polygraph.info is a fact-checking website that's produced by the Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally. In New York, the United Nations Security Council met to mark the day's events in Ukraine. Addressing the Council, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres marked the somber six-month anniversary of Russia's latest invasion of Ukraine by providing an update on his recent visit and called for continued access to Ukrainian grain to address global food insecurity. He also added,
"Despite progress on the humanitarian front, fighting in Ukraine shows no signs of ending, with new potential areas of dangerous escalation appearing. Two places were ever present in my mind and in my discussions in Ukraine, Zaporizhia and Olenivka. I remain gravely concerned about the situation in and around Europe's largest nuclear power plant in Zaporizhia. The warning lights are flashing."
He also called for humanitarian groups and fact-finding missions to have adequate access in order to complete their tasks. We have additional updates from throughout the day on our website, voanews.com/flashpoint. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday announced nearly $3 billion in new U.S. aid to Ukrainian forces. Biden said that the new tranche of military assistance was designed to help Ukraine defend itself over the long term, with U.S. officials saying some of the weaponry might not be used for a year or two. The U.S. leader said that the package would include air defense systems, artillery systems, and munitions, counter unmanned aerial systems, and radars. The new aid comes on top of about $10.6 billion in military assistance the U.S. has already sent to Ukraine in the last year and a half. In Washington, VOA Ukrainian service reporter Yulia Yarmolenko also sat down with the ambassador of Ukraine to the United States, Oksana Mokarova. They spoke on the eve of Ukrainian Independence Day to discuss Russia's aggression.
So after 6 months of war, what's next for Ukraine and what's your assessment of the ongoing conflict?
Well, if you look at the previous 6 months, as well as previous year when I served as the ambassador, but also previous 8 years, our priorities has always been the same. We would like to restore our territorial integrity. We need to win in this war, and we need to return not only our territories, but our people back. So that requires more security assistance, that requires more sanctions for Russia and more assistance to Ukraine. And within this three main blocks of priorities, this is what we are doing. So it really didn't change. With each month of this war, with each stage of this war, it evolves. Some capabilities are more needed than others, or more support is needed in one area or another, or we need to reconstruct grid sometimes, and sometimes it's about schools because the school year is about to start. But in general, we need to, as a good phrase military people say, we need to stay the course, we need to sustain the effort, we need to continue fight, rebuild, and show that resiliency and bravery that Ukrainian people have been showing during the past 8 years, but especially during the past 6 months.
And are you confident then that Western partners, United States, will also sustain their effort providing all necessary assistance to Ukraine?
I'm positive that United States is our strategic partner, or I should say strategic friend, number one, but also other allies and friends will do what they say they will do, that they are with us in this fight until we win. Because it's bigger than Ukraine. It's not only about Ukraine. It's about not only freedom and independence and territorial integrity of Ukraine, but it's about the values all of us share, about human dignity, about freedom to be who you want to be, about democracy, ultimately, because this is the reason why Russia attacked us in the first place. So as difficult as it is, and there are many, of course, problems and priorities, and this winter is going to be one of the most difficult winters, not only for Ukraine, but also for Europe and other countries, because, again, Russia is creating crisis after crisis after crisis, in addition to the aggression that they started in Ukraine and doing for the past 6 months and 8 years. But I'm positive that regardless of all these difficulties, our partners will be with us, and you know, we will sustain this effort together, and this victory, which I'm positive will come at the end of this very hard time, is going to be a shared victory for us, for the United States, and for all of our partners.
And on this Independence Day, is there something you want international community to hear, the message that you want to convey to them?
Just to say that it's, you know, this Independence Day for Ukraine, the 31st Independence, but actually, you know, for the country that for 1,000 years have been independent and then was occupied, that despite the fact that for 400 years we were under occupation by either Russian Federation or Soviet Union, it was not enough to kill who we are, to kill our independent spirit. And just 30 years of independence and just one generation that never knew occupation was enough for us to be able to fight in this truly David against Goliath fight, because if you look at the size of Ukraine and size of Russia and the number of people that we have and the number of equipment and weapons that we have, it is a miracle, like some people say, that we are able to do it. But, you know, we are fighting on our land for what is ours. We never wanted, we never attacked anyone in the past. But we will not surrender and we will not give up. And in this fight, we have to win.
That's Oksana Makarova, Ukraine's ambassador to the United States, speaking to my VOA Ukrainian service colleague, Yulia Yarmolenko. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. On Tuesday's program, I spoke with Christopher Paul, senior social scientist at the RAND Corporation. He and co-author Miriam Matthews wrote the 2016 essay entitled "The Russian Fire Hose of Falsehood Propaganda Model." And today, we continue that conversation.
I see. So I guess another question I have is, you know, when we talk about truth and things that are based in reality, a term that has come up, especially in the last few years, has been gaslighting. So where does that kind of fall in into how we perceive information on what is true and what is not, and psychologically, what's taking place?
Yeah, so gaslighting, depending on how you understand it, is false information and kind of lying to someone's face, making them question their own reality. That's in some ways just a bold rhetorical tactic to lie to someone's face of something they know isn't true. But more often, falsehoods are persuasive when you don't know that they're not true. So we as humans are fairly easy to manipulate because we're cognitively lazy, or to think of it differently, being really discriminating and thoughtful about what you're hearing and believing is hard work. And so we kind of go through life some of the time coasting, some of the time on autopilot. Famous social psychologist Daniel Kahneman calls it System 1 versus System 2 thinking. System 1 thinking is the easy, take the shortcuts, use the heuristics, get through your day mode of thinking. The one that when you get behind the wheel and all of a sudden you find yourself, you're in the parking lot at work because it's just that easy. You know, your brain takes care of all the little stuff. System 2 is when you're really focused, really concentrating, really alert, and you're much harder to trick, deceive, or manipulate when you're in System 2. But yeah, it's taxing. You can't be there all the time. So most of the time we rely on heuristics, peripheral cues. So for example, if you're watching something on YouTube and it looks like a nice news soundstage, and in one corner is some kind of logo that has the word news in it, and across the bottom is a rolling footer of headlines or data or information. And there's a person, a news anchor, standing on the stage. They're reasonably attractively dressed. They're pleasant to look at. They have a nice accent. Your brain says news. And provided that person says things that aren't totally inconsistent with your worldview, you're likely to accept them as true. And then the trouble starts, because once you accept something as true, humans are not computers. Humans are not giant card catalogs. So if you accept something as true, we're homo narratus, the story people. You bake the thing you've accepted as true into your worldview, into your personal story. So when someone comes along later, 6 minutes, 6 hours, 6 days, 6 weeks later, and tells you that something isn't true, the burden of truth on them is much higher, because they're not just asking you to go to a mental card catalog and tear up a false card. They're attacking your worldview. And so it's not impossible, but it's much harder after the fact. This is why first impressions are so important.
Anything else?
Yeah, just there are some other things that make humans vulnerable, other than just the things that we mentioned. So humans are generally poor judges of fact versus fiction. And worse, there's something about how our reasoning and memory works. So imagine that you are in System 2, you're being alert, and you're listening to RT, and you know that RT is sometimes rife with Russian propaganda. So you hear some factoid, and that's the word I'll use for something that's presented as fact, but may or may not be, and you recognize, oh, this is from RT, and so you put those two pieces of information together. Here's this factoid, I don't believe it, it's from RT. But then, as soon as 6 weeks later, those two things may have become divorced in memory. You may remember hearing the factoid, but you may have forgotten your adjudication that it was false because it came from RT. And then someone else repeats those factoid, and sometimes in your brain, oh, I've heard that before. So there's just all these cognitive vulnerabilities. And I guess on one other point that's worth raising is one of the things we mentioned, and you've mentioned, is the Russian fire hose of falsehoods' lack of commitment to consistency. So I do finally have some good news. Being inconsistent is not persuasive. But then back to the bad news. Being inconsistent does not undermine credibility as much as we think it should. So the benefits that the Russian propagandists get by not having to worry about deconflicting all their lies with each other or even with themselves, just in terms of ease of operations, they aren't really punished by that in terms of loss of credibility. The social psychology shows that being inconsistent isn't as harmful as you might think it is.
So how do you fight misinformation? Because one of the things that when you talk to journalists and people who are trying to combat misinformation, they talk about truth sandwiches, where you talk about the fact, then the misinformation, and then follow up at the end with another piece of true information. There's various fact-checking websites out there, including VOA's polygraph.info. But in terms of what the research shows, what kind of strategies work combating misinformation?
It's tricky because the psychology research suggests that the debunking, the refutation, is almost completely 100% ineffective. So the best way to combat disinformation is to get in front of it. When I give advice to spokespersons, especially government spokespersons, I recognize and I say to them, hey, I recognize it's incumbent upon you when someone says something untrue or malicious about you or your organization or your country, that you have to get up behind a podium and claim that it isn't true. And I point out that that has almost no impact at all. But I urge them to spend as little time in that compulsory, obligatory statement on the refutation and as much time as possible forewarning about the future. So if you get up and say such and such organization on such and such date said such and such thing, it isn't true, here's what actually happened, and as specifically as possible, this organization is likely to continue to spread falsehoods, and again, as specifically as possible, about these topics, now all of a sudden you're the first mover. You have the initiative. You are forming the first impressions. And that's really powerful. So the general advice is forewarning, inoculation. So in our paper, we torture the water metaphor. If this is the fire hose of falsehood, then do as much as you can to put raincoats on those at whom the fire hose will be directed. Forewarning, naming and shaming, pre-bunking, exposing not just past falsehoods, but who the propagandist is and what their future intent might be.
Christopher Paul is a senior social scientist at the RAND Corporation. Christopher, thank you very much for your insight.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And finally, since the start of the war in Ukraine, more than 6 million Ukrainians have been forced to leave their homes in search of safety. Among them, as pop singer Jamala, a Crimean Tatar. She lost her home twice, first when Russia took Crimea from Ukraine and annexed it in 2014, and then again this year when Russian forces launched their assault on the country. These days, she's using her star power to raise money for Ukraine. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze rounds us out.
In this dance studio in Warsaw, Crimean Tatar Ukrainian singer Jamala is preparing for the popular show Dancing with the Stars, premiering in Poland. When Polish television first approached her, she was reluctant. But when Polsat, a Polish TV channel, said its foundation planned to collect money for Ukraine, Jamala agreed.
For me, to take part in this show nowadays, it's important to remind about Ukraine. So important for me to take part, to dance for Ukraine, to dance for us, and to collect this money.
Her partner, the winner of the Dancing with the Stars competition, Polish actor and dancer Jacek Jaćke, decided to join in and help.
Jamala is Ukraine, so it's near us, near Poland. I know the situation in her country is really hard. And I see that she's dancing in this program with the idea, to show how it's really hard in her country and how it's really important to keep it in our mind.
The mother of two young sons herself, Jamala, as many other Ukrainian women with kids, left Ukraine at the beginning of the war. Today she puts all her energy into raising a flag and money for Ukraine. Participating in events, conferences, and concerts around the world, in the last 6 months, she helped to collect over $90 million.
My home, my heart is in Crimea. The Russian political, they do as possible as they can to destroy all Crimean Tatar community or our mentality or all our culture. I don't know how we could stop it, but we must fight for Crimea, for whole Ukraine.
Jamala recently released a new song. It's her way of saying thanks to the people who are helping Ukrainian refugees.
Thank you, stranger. It's really means a lot for me because it's my way as a songwriter, as a singer, to say thank you all people who are helping us everywhere, every our steps in this fight.
She thinks, thank you, dear friend, for staying close to me. But every single dawn I dream of my return. One day I'll get on a train home to my Ukraine. And she did just that. After 6 months abroad, Jamala decided to visit Ukraine for Independence Day celebration. And like so many Ukrainian refugees who return home, pay her respect to those who defend the homeland and who help Ukrainians around the world stand up to Russian aggression. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
And that's going to do it for us today. You can stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and other news and events from around the world 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. You can do so on your phone, your desktop computer, your tablet, or any other electronic device. You can also get additional updates and stories by following us on social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.